Good morning, I'm Matt Galloway. You're listening to the summer edition of The Current. Work all day, party all night. How the Alberta oil patch's drug and drinking problem causes a crude awakening at some oil companies. It is a potent mix. Thousands of young men migrating to Alberta to work in the oil patch. Once there, they often play just as hard as they work. It's anything from a few beers at the pub to a cocktail of hard drugs, hard liquor, and hardly any sleep, sometimes for days on end. But because work in the oil patch can be dangerous, companies see this party lifestyle as a threat to workplace safety, so some have turned to drug testing. But that crackdown isn't being accepted by everyone. Freelance writer and broadcaster Kyle G. Brown went to the rigs near Grand Prairie, 5 hours northwest of Edmonton, to prepare the documentary Work Hard, Play Hard. It first aired on The Current in April. And just a warning for some of our listeners, befitting, I suppose, a documentary set on an oil patch, there is some swearing and rough language in this documentary.
It's a clear and cold morning on a patch of land where trees have been cleared to make way for trucks, trailers, machinery, and a service rig. A small team is working to bring the well into production.
Coming back, Will. It's looking like gas.
About an hour outside of Grand Prairie, Craig Fisher of Ensign Servicing is hammering the iron collar off the long pipe that goes deep underground to gas deposits. He's opening it to see how much gas is coming up.
We run down with our tool, we got a cup on the bottom, almost like a vacuum, almost like we're siphoning fluid right now.
Fisher embodies the dilemma facing companies in the oil and gas industry today. He's young, just 20 years old. He's industrious, and like so many out here, he plays every bit as hard as he works.
I'm feeling pretty bad.
Sometimes harder.
Last night was a little bit of a shit show, and I feel like a bag of smashed assholes today, Kyle. I don't have a lot of energy. Luckily, it's a slack day, so nobody really cares, but if we were working hard, I'd probably be dragging behind a little bit.
It's not unusual that Craig is paying the price for a hard night out, but hangovers are one thing. People like Ryan Brace will tell you he's seen workers get high at work, on the leases as they're known. Brace left Newfoundland to escape a life of drugs when he came to the rigs 2 years ago.
The first person they sent me to work with was a crackhead. He started smoking crack on the way to work, which was a little odd, I found. As bad as I was, I thought it was a little odd to be on the way to a well site that, you know, we're smoking crack. it was a little scary.
How do you know he was a crackhead, though?
Because he just looked like one.
No, but
oh, well, how did I know? Oh, yeah. What confirmed it? When I came out of Tim Hortons with our coffee and he was smoking the crack pipe. That's what confirmed it. Can't get any better confirmation than that. You know, he's blowing the smoke in your face. So I went to work with this guy's crackhead, and then I called the office a day or two later, and I was like, okay, this is not going to happen, right? I'm not going to go to work with this guy. I really don't feel safe. And so then they sent me to work a few days. They fired him. Then a few days later, they sent me to work with another guy who was as much of an alcoholic as I had ever met in my life. And I'm from Newfoundland, there's a few of them down there. But this guy could outdrink any of them. So same thing again, I just didn't like it. So I started looking for another job.
For those who don't drink or do drugs on the job, but indulge on weekends and evenings, the after effects can nevertheless catch up with them. Fatigue, sluggishness, the work can be dangerous, from the heavy, fast-moving machinery to toxic chemicals and pressurized lines.
Lots of hazards. There's pinch points, there's explosive gas, there's a chance you could also have like an uncontrollable kick, which is a blowout, and it's a very dangerous job, very dangerous.
Ryan Tamplin is a driller on the rigs, and just like Ryan Brace and Craig Fisher, he has come to work hungover. The difference is, he paid for it.
I've torn all the tendons in my left forearm.
Doing what?
Spinning rods, 7/8. It's just really physical work, spinning rods.
What caused it that particular day?
Hungover. I was really hungover that day. It's very hard and tough, and I don't know, I just wasn't doing the proper procedure for doing it, and it cost me. Cost me a month and a half of work, light duty.
Compared to some, though, Ryan Tamplin got off lightly. It's not uncommon to hear of rig workers speak of lost fingers and crushed hands. Employers say the danger is not only to themselves, but to their colleagues as well.
I'll just tell you what the guys tell me. Right? Our co-workers say, I don't want to work beside a guy who's stoned or impaired because it's dangerous, right? So you're increasing my personal risk. I said, I don't want that. And so we agree with those and say that you're right. It's perhaps a smaller amount, but it's the consequences are so severe that you can't tolerate it. Right?
Rob Willman is vice president of health safety and environment at Ensign Servicing. It's one of many companies that now scrutinize their employees' use of drugs and alcohol with the kind of attention that would have been rare 10 years ago. Part of that scrutiny includes urine tests for drug use. Ensign, where Craig Fisher and Ryan Brace work, tests applicants before hiring them and also tests any work crew that has what's called an incident, which could be anything from a vehicle collision to a well blowout. Willman is not only concerned about workers who get high on the job, but also about those who come to work hungover.
You're not functioning at your peak level. Therefore, you can make more mistakes. There's all sorts of things, health issues, cognitive issues around that. Therefore, you've increased the risk to yourself, your co-workers, and perhaps the public.
There is a problem out there. Our workplaces are less safe than they have been, and they're less safe than they should be. But the problem isn't that people are coming to work under the influence of either drugs or alcohol.
The Alberta Federation of Labour, or AFL, is opposed to drug testing, mainly for two reasons. First, says its president Gil McGowan, they're an infringement of workers' privacy. Second, he says, they don't work.
Workplace accidents are on the rise. Workplace fatalities are on the rise. And, you know, we in the labor movement are deeply troubled by these trends. And we think that more action needs to be taken both by employers and government to reverse these trends. However, you know, all we see from many employers, you know, instead of talking about things that could actually improve health and safety on work sites, they seem to be fixated on this idea of implementing drug testing regimes, which, as we've seen over and over again, have almost no effective track record in terms of improving workplace health and safety.
In fact, Alberta Employment, Immigration and Industry recently commissioned a study on the impact of drug and alcohol testing. It found no conclusive evidence that drug alcohol testing programs are effective in reducing injury rates. With the jury dubious but still out on the effectiveness of drug testing in Canada, Ensign is among a growing number of companies taking their lead from the US, where drug tests are more common and thought to markedly improve workplace safety. Rob Willman again.
I have statistics from our U.S. drilling division that shows that, bears that out. As they've increased their drug screening routines and follow-up routines, so the sort of habitual drug users are leaving that workforce, the injury rates fall.
Where U.S. companies have test statistics to draw on, Canadian firms have court decisions to be wary of. Human rights statutes have been invoked in court cases and workers' tribunals, preventing Canadian companies from adopting the more aggressive types of testing more common south of the border. Cedar Reactor Limited, for example, was ordered to compensate the lost wages of a worker who was fired for failing a series of drug tests. The Alberta Human Rights and Citizenship Commission ruled in 2005 that Les Halter's use of marijuana constituted drug dependence. Instead of firing him, Cedar Reactor should have offered rehabilitation and a job in a non-safety-sensitive position. Last year, the Court of Queen's Bench ruled in another case that an oil sands company in Fort McMurray unfairly dismissed a worker after he failed a drug test. The worker smoked pot several days before starting his new job at Kellogg Brown & Root and began work before the test results were in. A week and a half later, he was fired. The judge said the company went too far in punishing him for something that did not happen on the job. Cases like these have companies searching for programs that won't get them in trouble with human rights commissions. Enform, the non-profit safety and training arm of the upstream petroleum industry, is working on a policy model which, when published later this year, will form a standardized approach to drug and alcohol testing across the industry. But some wonder whether any of this matters to workers who are finding ways around whatever tests come their way.
I need some cleanup, all of my buddies. So.
Yes. Is it just weed in your system or anything else?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it's just weed.
When was the last time you smoked?
Last week.
Last week, and in the previous, say, 3 weeks.
Retro Relics Bazaar and Emporium in downtown Grand Prairie sells a variety of tonics that make the urine test sample of even a heavy drug user come up clean. The shop sells thousands of bottles every year.
However, what that's doing is it's leaching THC out of your fat cells.
Dimly lit and smelling of incense, Retro Relics sells posters, T-shirts, New Age books, cannabis paraphernalia, and much more. Alan Comeau, known locally as Big Al, helps the customer choose from a wide array of colorful bottles of juices and powders.
You're about 250 pounds?
Yeah, 240, yeah.
240. So yeah, you'd be looking at the bigger drink.
Yep.
Basically something like this. With this, for best results, you take it about 2 hours before your test.
Okay.
It's critical that you urinate at least twice before you go to your test. Three times is better than twice. After you drink this, the third or fourth time you urinate should be your test.
Big Al reaches for one of the bottles on the packed shelves behind the counter. Bottles with labels that read, Super Clean Pea Body Cleanser, Absolute Detox, Mega Clean, and Extra Clean Herbal Cleansing.
60 even is fine. Debit.
Big Al says the vast majority of customers who report back successfully cheat the system, passing tests in spite of having drugs or booze in their body. And where the so-called flush kits aren't enough, there's another option.
And then if you need something that, say, is going to a lab where these masking agents won't work, or you have something in your system other than THC, then you're looking at a synthetic urine pouch.
So it's literally a pouch that contains synthetic urine that you're supposed to substitute for your own.
That's correct. I'll show you an example. So what you got here is a Velcro style belt, and attached to the belt is a pouch that has synthetic urine in it. So you heat it up to body temperature, you put it on, and it'll stay that way for about an hour. So when you go into your test, you take this little hose, you unclip these clips, and you want to put it under a little bit of pressure so you get a little bit of foaming action at the top, because they look for that. And then you're good to go.
For Craig Fisher, this shop has come in handy.
Yeah, I did do it. I took a flush hit and it worked like a charm. I just had to pee in the cup, make sure I was clean, but I wasn't. So a couple hours before I had to go take my piss test, I bought a flush kit and you have to chug it and drink some water and then pee three times before you actually do your test. And then they did another test and I didn't recognize them. I'm like, what's that one? And she's like, well, it's to see if you took a flush kit or not. And I'm like, oh shit. I'm not going to get a job, but for some reason it just worked out.
He was rehired, and he continued to work and play as before. For the folks at Retro Relics, this is as it should be. Their products help workers subvert a system which is, according to owner Tim Trepanier, dysfunctional and unjust.
Well, it doesn't seem fair, especially when, you know, most law-abiding citizens, you know, are hardworking and they may participate in that activity after hours, but it doesn't affect their job performance. I think if the oil and gas companies and the insurance companies could find a way to test for intoxication on the job, like at the time when people are working, and find a way to, you know, if someone is impaired, they should lose their job or they should be suspended, but not punish someone who's actually just a recreational user after hours or very occasionally.
Companies beg to differ with this and still more with the sale of products that distort their test results. In 2005, Enform, on behalf of industry members, wrote to the ministry responsible for workplace health and safety to outlaw products that conceal drugs and alcohol in urine samples. All to no avail. The products remain legal. Rob Willman at Ensign is confident that these tricks rarely succeed anyway.
In general, I think the masking agent, dodge and all that, just doesn't work. And the labs will tell you that it doesn't work. There's probably the odd case where it has squeaked through for some reason, but in general, you can't hide.
But what if I can tell you that I know of a number of people who have managed to take the test, they've used the flush kits, they say it's worked because they ended up either getting rehired or bypassing any kind of disciplinary action?
Well, or perhaps they just waited long enough that it was, the system levels were low enough that it went below the thresholds of concern, right? You know, i.e. the use was back enough days. So I can't say, because, you know, that you're talking about an analytical process here, and all I can do is rely on the labs that do it. But since these are global tests done through large industrial labs that do the healthcare stuff that I don't buy it.
Hi, I'm here for my drug test.
Perfect, you must be Dave?
Yes.
Oil and gas companies depend on test centers like Mobile Industrial Health Services in Grand Prairie to screen their workers and job applicants.
Hey, first thing, I'm just going to get you to empty your pockets into here, please. Great, and that's everything?
Yep.
Okay, now I'm just going to get you to pat down. So pat quite forcefully, just all around here.
Eunice Friesen is the operations manager here.
Good, I'm going to get you to lift your pant legs to your knees, please.
She has to make sure that candidates don't cheat by tampering with the sample or by smuggling in urine that isn't their own.
Okay, I'm going to get you to pick out a container here. All right, so we need this container.
We see people on a daily basis who both test positive and who make attempts to mask the results of the tests. Our company here, we do probably 10 to 20 drug tests in a day. And at the end of the day, we're sending away for lab confirmation a few of those tests.
People who work in the patch say they've noticed an increase in the number of workers taking drugs over the past few years. Friesen has noticed a similar trend in the lab.
I think there's probably been an increase in both positive tests and questionable samples that are given to us. Oil and gas specifically is pretty stressful. So we know a lot of use goes on. We're seeing a little more positives on the harder line drugs, so to speak, like the meths and amphetamines and cocaine than we used to see. Still lots of positives for THC, though. That's by far and away the most positives that we get are for THC.
Nope, do a real good job with soap, please. Under your fingernails and everything. And rinse really well.
THC, or tetrahydrocannabinol, is the active ingredient in marijuana. Unlike most drugs, which are water-soluble, THC is fat-soluble, so it can remain in the body and detectable in urine for up to 60 days, depending on the amount consumed. No comparison, then, to the 3 or 4 days it takes for cocaine and crack to leave the body. Critics of current drug testing programs like Big Al and Tim Trepanier of Retro Relics say pot smokers are therefore more likely to fail a test and be penalized than a hard drug user.
They're really coming down hard on casual cannabis users. They're grouping them into the same group as cocaine and meth users, which I don't think is fair.
Maybe I'll put this to you, Tim, then. Aren't you undermining their attempts to keep the oil patch safe by providing flush kits and agents which help employees or prospective employees to conceal or mask their drug intake?
It could be considered that way. However, I don't think we're helping people conceal the fact that they're impaired at work. What we're doing is helping people who are casual cannabis smokers, who do what they do in their own time off the job to have a stable job and income to support their family. So the oil and gas companies have every right to test, and I fully support that. But I think in a free society, we have a right to sell these products in order to help people keep their jobs.
The number of workplace accidents in Alberta has been rising steadily for the past few years. In 2004, there were more than 154,000 workplace accidents. In 2005, there were just under 170,000. And in 2006, the number of accidents surpassed 180,000. But this rise comes alongside expanding production and higher man hours. During this time, too, a growing number of companies have implemented some kind of drug testing regime, suggesting the link between drugs and alcohol and accidents is anything but straightforward. The AFL says companies are exaggerating the link, making scapegoats of their workers. Company heads say they consider drugs and alcohol as one issue among many. This debate is a long way from the rigs where Fisher and Brace pull hundreds of meters of pipe out of the hole one by one. Fisher says they work safely, not because of the prospect of drug tests, but because the crew is like a family.
Once you get in, it's like a family, it's a brotherhood. If you let your brothers down, that's one of the worst feelings you can have. Like, you know, when they say, you know, you're slacking today or you did a bad job, that'll destroy you. Like, it'll make you feel just like shit. You know, it's all about respect out there. It's pretty disrespectful if you like come to work and you're not pulling your own weight and you sleep in the doghouse and all that and make everybody else work that much harder. It's a piss off to everybody. Actually, most of the times when you go out and drink and you pin her harder the next day just to show everybody, you know, I'm not fazed by it. You know, I went out and drank, so what? I'll sweat my bag off. You just work that much harder just to show the guys.
Cam Mather, who's worked his way up on the rigs from roughneck to driller, says the best people to police safety on the rigs are the workers themselves.
If you have a guy who's obviously strung out on something, he doesn't fit in and he won't last very long. And within a few days or a week, he'll either quit or be skidded. And I mean, unless the whole rig crew's strung out, but I don't work on those kind of crews.
Employers will continue for years to depend on young, mobile men, a labor pool that is not likely to contain many teetotalers. And the job of reconciling the many hours spent at work with a policy that demands that workers not indulge themselves afterwards will be a tough one. Companies now have a bewildering variety of approaches to drugs and alcohol, some more tolerant than others. The emergence of a standardized policy model for testing to come later this year will begin to clarify the matter for workers as well as their bosses. But it will remain a controversial issue for some time yet. Gil McGowan at the AFL says the focus on drugs and alcohol comes at the expense of more important issues, such as the need for better training, equipment, and an enforcement of the existing health and safety rules.
Especially in construction, we have a lot of young guys who, you know, on the weekend may smoke a joint, spend some time with their friends, but when they go to the work site on Monday, after a weekend of spending time with their friends, the fact that they had a joint over the weekend doesn't mean that they're impaired when it comes to being able to do their jobs. But with these random drug testing regimes, it does mean that they can be, and often are, summarily dismissed. We think that's an inappropriate use of the employer's arbitrary power.
You've been listening to a documentary called Work Hard, Play Hard, put together by freelance broadcaster Kyle G. Brown. This story first aired on The Current in April. Well, one final note for today. The great Italian filmmaker Michelangelo Antonioni has passed away at the age of 94. He died on Monday night, the same day as the legendary Swedish auteur Ingmar Bergman. Antonioni's films were not tightly plotted, action-packed affairs. Instead, his camera liked to linger on settings he felt were symbolic of the modern human experience. One of his best-known movies is Blow Up from 1966. This is a surreal murder mystery involving a swinging fashion photographer in 60s London. It was his first English-language film, and it was nominated for a couple of Academy Awards. We leave you this morning with the main title theme to Blow Up, composed by Herbie Hancock. I'm Matt Galloway. Thanks for listening to the summer edition of The Current.